My name is Lucy Quaccinella. I'm an attorney in private practice in San Francisco. I specialize in health and social services issues, and I have no disclosures for this session. I began working with WEACT in 2006 with a short-term Fulbright grant, and I'd like to tell you today a little bit about the work that we're trying to do to integrate legal services into these medical services and trauma counseling. And given my background here in California, working with low and moderate income families on health and social services issues, I know it's really urgent here to bring legal tools to medical and mental health programs, because so often practitioners at the clinical and mental health level can do Cadillac service, but if families are facing serious legal problems, it can really undermine all that good work. Marge and Mary have talked about the basic agenda of the program. We've learned a lot from the clients there in Rwanda that human rights and legal protection really needs to be a part of the equation. The way we approach this, the legal project is, of course, the most, it's the newest kid on the block at WEACT. And we realized early on that we weren't going to have the full complement of legal services that we really needed, in part because educated people, including attorneys, were targeted in the 1994 genocide. So there really aren't very many lawyers in the country to begin with, and we really don't have the resources to go out and hire them. So we took a real focused approach on community legal education to empower the clients we work with and the community associations that WEACT works with. Discrimination based on HIV status and being female and gender-based violence quickly rose to the top of concerns in some surveys we did, which is completely consistent with what you've heard from Marge and Mary. We started with some educational workshops, again, because that was the best resource. We worked, of course, with Rwandan legal professionals, law schools, judges, and primarily community-based groups. One key feature of these workshops back in 2006 was that each of the participants representing his or her organization, mostly women, but some men, had to commit to taking whatever they learned back to their organizations. In other words, the model was each one teach one. We were able to hire two young Rwandan law graduates, and this really proved to be key to our success. You'll see them both there. One was raised in, they're both Rwandan, of course. One was raised in Congolese refugee camps, the other in Ugandan refugee camps. Before 1994, there were earlier genocides, unfortunately, in Rwanda, and their parents had fled. So one of these young men is Francophone, the other is Anglophone, and that was very helpful. There are three languages in the country, Kinyarwanda, English, and French. At the end of the workshops, the participants decided to create their own association of, if you will, lay legal advocates. And again, this has been very important because it's allowed them to, if you will, institutionalize in a way, coming together, staying together to continue to educate themselves and their community members. And they called their network Du Fatanye. They elected Joseph, one of our law graduates, as their president. And we began a series of follow-up monitorings. This really was key because, you know, it's nice to talk about human rights. It's nice to have these discussions. Was it really helping the community organizations with their membership? And if it hasn't been made clear before, WEACT works with about 27 grassroots partner groups as advisors. So they meet with the medical folks, they meet with the trauma folks, and we tapped into that network. The response was really positive. People felt that armed with this basic information about legal rights, they could at least begin to empower themselves, empower others, and mediate disputes. One of the case examples, or a series of case examples, that unfortunately is all too common, involves women and children being evicted, chased off their family homes, either when someone in the family or the community learns about their HIV status, or the man in the family who was protecting them dies, often from AIDS. Other facts or other situations that came to our attention through these partner consultations, unfortunately, too often involved gender-based violence. The partners then asked for a handbook, again, because they wanted to be in a position of educating others and taking this information to the communities. Our law graduates were very much involved in this work, and eventually they produced a community handbook on healthcare rights and related issues. They focused primarily on HIV/AIDS, access to healthcare rights, gender-based violence, but also property rights, because that really related to housing security. The Rwandan government has actually been surprisingly supportive, from my view, from the perspective that they've really taken an active role in reviewing materials, bringing a lot of their legal staff, and making their resources available. This just shows you on the left-hand side a long grouping of other community organizations we worked with. We think that was key to making this community legal education model accepted and successful. And then on the right-hand side, you'll see a listing of other non-governmental organizations and the government ministries. So very, very collaborative type approach. Those are the topics for the handbook. Left-hand side, you see primarily healthcare rights. Right-hand side, you'll see gender-based violence and property rights. And I really can't stress how important that right-hand column is. We so often talk about human rights at a very high level, but when it really gets down to the ground, it's these basic rights in society that have so much to do with people's access to healthcare and dignity. Again, more of the women in later consultations. The biggest question for us now in the program, does this stuff really work? And again, you know, we keep getting reports from the community members that you know, keep the information coming. We're really able to use it to mediate some disputes. They're not 100% successful, but they are able to get families back into their homes. They are able to assist a woman or a child who has been subjected to unspeakable gender-based violence. It's important, especially because they have so little access to legal help in any other way. Significant challenges, of course, remain. You know, one of the factors I've mentioned is that we don't really have the access to lawyers that we need. But many of the challenges involve just the personal nature of domestic violence and how difficult it is in a post-conflict situation in particular, where so many of the social and political structures have broken down, to really effectively get at that. Not that we solved it in the United States, of course. Marge has talked about our growing focus on adolescent issues, and back in 2007, unfortunately, this really got our attention when one of the outreach workers in our community partner associations brought the following case to our attention. A woman had been in a relationship with a man. She was positive. She didn't disclose her status to her partner. He eventually learned he was HIV infected. He assumed that it must have come from her. He confronted her with that. She admitted it. And then in what we believe was an act of retaliation, he raped her five-year-old. Unfortunately, there's this prevalent myth throughout sub-Saharan Africa that sex with a virgin will cure HIV. And we see this in the communities. The association, these partners who we had trained in an earlier session, were able to work with the mother, work with the child. The mother initially was in total shock and afraid about the consequences of stigma. The association was really able to help her work through that, get the child medical care, and get themselves in contact with a brand new development. Well, it's about a year and a half old now, the Gender Desk Hotline. Which is a very concerted, systematic effort on the part of the Rwandan government to make prosecutors and police in every district in the country more gender sensitive about these issues. They get specific training. We now have the names, cell phone numbers of the prosecutors and police who are assigned to these special units in every one of the districts. We provide that information to our community partners. It's part of our training. The jury's still out. Is it going to make a difference? But it's given us a new tool to work with in the country. Obviously, we need to collaborate with our partners in trauma counseling, and Mary's described that program to you. Some more real-life examples. This, now that we're coordinating more with the trauma counseling staff, we're hearing now from the staff on a more regular basis the challenges that they face. And for them, it's some of the clinical issues that, you know, many of us know here. For example, on confidentiality. Our staff on the medical and trauma side are very well trained on the need to rigorously guard confidentiality. So when these horrible abuse cases occur, one of the questions they have is, you know, I want to run out and tell the police. I want to tell the school authorities. Am I authorized to do that? Rwandan law is not that clear. And so that's another role that we're trying to participate in, is the development of best practices. This is the site where trauma counseling takes place, and we've been able to have our legal project director co-located there. We've spun off a non-governmental organization under Rwandan law. Joseph himself did the legal work on that. We think it's very important for empowerment and keeping this very localized in Rwanda that they have their own NGO. These are some of the cases. Joseph has begun representing individual clients on referral from the trauma counseling program and from the community partners. We're really trying to keep a tight rein on this because we obviously would be quickly overwhelmed, and we're really trying to keep an eye out toward what the law reform, if you will, issues might be. I'm sorry this chart is a little too dense to really be read, but essentially what the community partners have been telling us is really shaking out in the actual case representation. That is, at the top of the chart, the largest numbers of cases we've seen so far involve women and children who are HIV positive, who are losing their housing, losing their property because a spouse has left the family or has passed away. A variety of other issues are coming to our attention. Gender-based violence is in there in the mix. We haven't had the number of cases that I anticipated, so I think we need to look at that a little more carefully. You know, why is that not coming to our attention? Are people not disclosing? What are the reasons around that? Do we not have the right kinds of connections? It's very much a new program, but we're learning a lot. We work closely with Rwandan law schools. We're trying to build capacity with legal students. We really see our role as being technical assistance. We do think there is relevance for this model for other countries. Of course, conditions will dictate to a large extent the kinds of adaptations that would have to be made. For example, in conflict situations, such as in Congo, you'd really have to do things differently. And with that, I'd say murakoze.